Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's been a pleasure to have Andy Nowicki back on the show. Of course, Andy is the author of several books, including Conspiracy, Compliance, Control, and Defiance, a primer on what is and what is to be done. And he is also the assistant editor of Alternative Right. His website is altrightnovelist.com. Is that still correct?
That's still correct. It's Affirmative Right.
That's right. That's my notes are funny. It's Affirmative Right. Yeah, that's right, because you changed it.
Right.
So, Andy, tonight we wanted to talk. You've been doing a number of videos on this coronavirus, COVID-19, CV-19 crisis, the pandemic that seems...
The Kung Flu.
Yeah, the Kung Flu. People call it the crony virus. That's another... the plandemic.
That's a good one.
This virus thing, you've done a number of videos talking about it, and we can get your... view of what's going on. Now, the coronavirus itself, I checked this. It's kind of weird. It's a worldometer, which counts the death toll. it's another thing it's weird they've put up. I was like, geez, it's never been done before. People are checking. But according to this, these are official numbers. Coronavirus cases globally are 1,342,221. That's as of this morning. Deaths are 74,554. Recovered cases, 278,168. As it stands now, 95% of cases are mild. 5% are considered serious or critical. In the United States, 364,059 cases, 10,792 deaths. Now, that sounds bad, but put that in perspective. Since 2010, the flu has resulted in 9.3 million to 49 million illnesses each year in the United States. Each year, on average, 5 to 20% of the United States of the U.S. population gets the flu. It is estimated the flu results in 31.4 million outpatient visits and more than 200,000 hospitalizations each year. That's just in this country. During the severe 2017-2018 flu season, one of the longest in recent years, the estimates indicate that more than 900,000 people were hospitalized and more than 80,000 people died from the flu in 2017-2018. That's compared to, I think, we have just 10,700 now in the United States. Again, got to put these things in perspective. My state, which was locked down, as they say, I don't know if there's any legal term for that. I know it's a prison term, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Lockdown.
It's finally admitting that they see you as prisoners, essentially, to be done with as they will. Yeah.
In Virginia, which has been declared a disaster area, which frees up all types of funds and goodies from the federal government, we have reported 2,878 cases, a grand total of 54 deaths. Again, put that in perspective. I think for over the past 6 years, annual flu deaths in the state have been between 1,200 and 1,500. Mm. About 2.8 million people in the United States die a year. Italy, this is supposed to be the apocalyptic scene in Italy, where it was worse. Only 12% of COVID-19 deaths list COVID as the COVID-19 as the cause. Reports show up to 88% of Italy's alleged COVID-19 deaths could be misattributed. On March 18th, Italy's National Health Authority released a statement which showed that more than 99% of Italy's coronavirus fatalities have been people who suffered from previous medical conditions. The average age of death, I think, is 79.5, close to 80. So there's that, here's a wider perspective. This is a piece written by John Rappaport. He said, finally, let's look at the figures for ordinary flu for the whole planet. A study published in the Journal of Pharmacy and Therapeutics states influenza is a highly contagious respiratory illness that is responsible for a significant morbidity and mortality. Approximately 9% of the world's population is affected annually, with up to 1 billion infections, 3.5 million severe cases, and 300,000 to 500,000 each year. A billion cases every year. Is this called a pandemic? Is the whole world locked down every year? No. Interesting enough, last month, and this didn't get any press, not much press, rather. You think it would. The United Kingdom government, the UK government, on its website announced on March 23rd under the status of COVID-19. As of 19 March 2020, COVID-19 is no longer considered to be a high consequence infectious disease, HCID, in the UK. The Advisory Committee on Dangerous Pathogens is also of the opinion that COVID-19 should no longer be classified as HCID. Well, that's interesting because they seem to be tightening the noose in the UK and here regionally. We've heard reports that Boris Johnson is now in intensive care. He's the prime minister. Prince Charles supposedly got it as well. I don't know whether we can believe those reports. You know, it's the media. Mm-hmm. Is this a psyop? Now, of course, just because he's in ICU doesn't mean that the whole country should be locked down, because recently the original study, the Imperial College study, which projected 2.1 million deaths in the United States and over 500,000 deaths in the United Kingdom if no measures were taken from COVID-19, recently revised that. It went down from 200,000 in the United States to 20,000 in the United States, and from 500,000 down to 5,700 in the UK. Of course, they said this is because measures have been taken. Of course, that's not true, because the World Health Organization was reporting daily, and they knew that the numbers had plateaued, the death rate had plateaued. We had the experience in China, Wuhan, only 3,700 deaths out of a population of almost 60 million people. So they knew that the data was false, but they issued this horrible apocalyptic report, which justified the, quote, lockdowns in the United States and the UK. That's being revised. It's no longer an HCID disease. So why are they locking things down? It seems to be that the measures being taken, the shutting down of the U.S. economy, simply isn't warranted given the numbers we're having. Even if it was 10 times worse, because the consequences of shutting down an economy will kill a whole lot of people. So that's where we are.
Yeah, that's where we are. And it's interesting, you know, your show, is it still called Our Interesting Times, or have you changed the name of your show?
And that's still Our Interesting Times, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a Chinese curse, right? Yes. And that's kind of ironic now, considering, you know, that this thing that supposedly came out of China, this Chinese virus, as it's supposed to be controversial to say in some circles, has made for interesting times. Or maybe it's more accurate to say it's been a pretext to create interesting times. And
yes,
and of course I know that you use that phrase our interesting times ironically, because it's meant as a curse, right? It's mm-hmm. it's a Chinese curse. It's like, may you live in interesting times, because if you live in boring times, well, you're probably okay. You're probably, I don't know, relaxed and don't have many worries except excess boredom. But when things are interesting, like they are now, you know, it's not so great. That's so great to be alive in this particular time period. Yeah, gosh. So where do we begin to talk about this? I mean, you laid out all the statistics. All the statistics are there in plain sight. I mean, they even, as you say, on the official UK site. And you know, this was referred to me. This came to my attention the other day. I think I was watching a David Icke video, and I should say David Icke, whatever you think about him, he's been fantastic mm-hmm. on this front. And there have been a few other brave commentators who have gone out there and said, look, what the hell is going on? This is, you know, the what they're trying to sell here, as this is some kind of black death. That is belied by the statistics, and it's belied by their own statistics. And yet they're still at it. They're still, as they say, doubling down with the scare tactics and the fear mongering and the panic inducement. You know, it's really just, I'm still kind of reeling from it all. Like, I didn't see this coming. I don't know if anybody did, but you know, I knew it was 2020. I knew this was, you know, I'd heard talk that this was, you know, a year of occult significance, and that the cult that seemingly rules us had possibly had plans for this year. But I didn't see, like, just it's amazing just to think a month ago When we're talking right now, it's April 6th. So on March 6th, they were talking about this, this virus coming out of China and how it was out of control in China and how it was, going to maybe become a pandemic. And there was some concern about it. But I didn't see anything. My first memory along the lines of, where things have gone. I remember talking to my brother-in-law, and he was telling me that, this may have been around May or March 10th or so. He said, they're going to have the NCAA tournament games be played with no crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what are you? That's ridiculous. They're going to be playing out the NCAA tournament, this annual event that draws millions of fans and creates tons of excitement. they're going to be playing in front of empty auditoriums, except for a few people, like families or whatever. And I said, that is nuts. But little did I know that was just the beginning. Because a couple of days later, of course, they said, well, actually, there's not going to be a tournament at all because it's too dangerous. And actually, the NBA is going to suspend their play, and the NHL is going to suspend their play, and Major League Baseball, spring training is going to end, and they're going to indefinitely delay the start of their season. And I know that sports is means more to some people than it does to other people, but for me, I've never heard anything like that. And then it got crazier and crazier, and it was like, we kept hearing things about, we don't want any kind of crowds, anytime even a small group of people are together,
mm-hmm.
that is an irresponsible thing. So they, what really was a kick in the nuts to me was when they canceled my son's soccer league. My son loved to play soccer.
My kids' little leagues were canceled. Yeah.
And I was just like, I was so upset. I was so angry about that. Because I was just thinking, look, I mean, really, just like 9 or 10 kids playing against each other on a soccer field, and a few parents watching, and a few parents and members of the family watching in the stands. That's going to be some dangerous event. That's going to, like, we're not talking about huge mass crowds here.
Little League soccer doesn't draw a big crowd.
No.
I mean, in America, Major League Soccer doesn't draw for
it. Yeah, I know.
My reaction was playing baseball, kids out getting sun. And
yeah,
that's when I knew, and I started, I called BS on it almost immediately, just because that's my knee jerk reaction now. But I just, I did it not only half serious because I thought they were exaggerating, but as the things unfolded, it became clear to me that, how are kids, first of all, the chances of you contract getting sick from this and dying, becoming seriously ill from the flu from ages, 1 to 59 is virtually zero unless you have comorbidity, you're sick. So
underlying condition, yeah.
So the schools, the youth interact, these things, even work with younger people, it just isn't a high risk factor. And they've never done this in previous flu seasons, despite the fact that I think the Hong Kong flu in the United States in 1968 killed close to 100,000. You had 130,000 killed in 1958. And this is out of a nation of less than 200 million people.
Yeah, that was when the country was a lot smaller, yeah, too.
And baseball season wasn't canceled in 1958.
No.
Or was it 1968?
Never did anything like that. And, I mean, and then it, it was other things like, suddenly, you can't go into restaurants mm-hmm. to eat anymore. And you can't, movie theaters are closed. And, the mall is closed down. And it's and then as you know, it has become something like, well, we really think you should stay in your homes just all the time,
Okay, that's
if
just,
possible.
yeah, and that's just, that's so stupid. It's so ludicrous. It's so contrary to ideas of good health. And obviously, you need sunshine in the springtime to metabolize vitamin D. This is why the winter months are considered cold and flu season. It's not because the microbes are more vicious in the winter. It's because people are more vulnerable to winter because of lack of vitamin D. And also, they're inside and the air is circulating in these things. So, I mean, it's everything contrary to what we understand to good health. So, you know.
And so, and for me, I mean, I'm a, I'm a restless spirit. So I'm not a homebody. I don't like to just sit around the house, and I haven't, and I've still gone out every day. I go for a run. I go wherever. I get out and do my thing. And so far, I mean, nothing has happened. And I live in a part of the country where it's a pretty I'm pretty thankful to be where I'm at, because this is sort of the gun-toting, don't tread on me part of the country. And I think they would have a lot more trouble establishing martial law here, with the kind of culture that you've got in these parts. Whereas in other parts of the country, other parts of the world, where there isn't that same ingrained sense of liberty, and maybe there and where there's more of a sense of, well, we should just be obedient, and it's interesting. Certain cultures are more. Have more seem to lay more of an emphasis on certain types of lifestyle, or certain ways of reacting to authority, I guess.
But now they're talking about like wearing masks in public.
I mean, I've seen people. I mean, it's been a pretty common sight. I've gone to the
Yeah,
store.
much more common. But then,
Everybody's
yeah, but you know they'll try to, if you enter the store, you have to wear a mask or something. Or you know the mask. I don't
So,
understand the mask doesn't work. That's what I guess that's all about.
it's so and so gosh, so what
Well, I
more
think
can I say?
what we're dealing with here is we're shocked by the sort of the imposition of medical martial law so quick and very little resistance, the
Very
shuttering of
little
businesses without
resistance,
any regard to the effects on employment, people's livelihood, the closing of these schools, the destruction of civil life, of commercial life, and these things, the shuttering down. The now again, you were shocked that the NCAA tournament is canceled. Major League
That was
Baseball is
well. That was the first thing. Yeah, that was like, I was just like, what? Like that. Well, when he said, actually, it was before it was canceled. It was when it was just, well, they're gonna play the games, but they're gonna, not let there be crowds for the
Well,
games.
that's an
I
interesting
that.
psyop because what that's doing is that's the example of this is how you can create the theater of a pandemic, a serious situation. The effect proves the cause. So most people are thinking, wow, this must be really serious because they wouldn't do this because the NCAA tournament is very important in our economy and culture. If they canceled the Super Bowl, whoa, like if this had happened earlier, canceling, what effect that would have had. So you think these events are so important, so there has to be something serious. Actually, no. The idea is this creates the theater that there's something really serious out there.
And that's what the and that's what I've responded to more is the I think that's what that's how the PSYOP works, is how, because things just feel different. You feel oppressed, and you feel you walk into a drugstore, and suddenly there's signs up everywhere, social distancing, other there's these words and phrases and these technocratic lingo and jargon that everybody's using. Nobody said social distancing in
Flat, flatten the curve.
on March 2nd. Nobody knew what social distancing was, and all of a sudden everybody's saying social distancing and sheltering in place and all this crazy stuff. And I also talk about in a video about how even the term quarantine is being the it's like it's being used in this way, in this radical sense that I don't rem I mean I don't think has ever been used before. Like quarantine generally means if there's a population, if there's an area where there has been an outbreak, they shut that area, they cordon that area off and keep the so that they can keep the sickness contained.
Yes.
Quarantine does not mean everybody has to go off by themselves and into their own houses and apartments and stay away from everybody else. That has never been what quarantine has meant, but that's what people mean when they talk about quarantine now. They mean, oh well, I just have to stay in my home now, and that's quarantine. And it's mind blowing how much people have accepted, how much people have just decided that they're going to put up with. It's mind blowing, and it's depressing for me. If you just strip away the emotion of it and strip away the injustice of it is an interesting thing to observe, just in a if you're just going to be cold and Machiavellian about it, just this is I mean we'll hand it to the cult, the whatever we call them, the deep state, the powers that shouldn't be. I'll give them this, that this was a curveball. I didn't see this one coming. I thought, maybe there'll be more bogus gun attacks. Maybe there'll be a bogus alien invasion or something. I didn't see this happening. I didn't see this coming. And so then I guess the question becomes why. And you seem to we were talking before the show, and you seem to have a good grasp on the why. So maybe you've probably shared this already with your listeners, but just share it again, maybe for people who haven't heard it before, because it was the first I'd heard it too, and it's made sense to me as well.
Well, if you look at the chronology of this event, leading into it, at least the fall, it was in September that you started hearing trouble with the what they call the repurchase or repo market, with U.S. government bonds and also corporate debt. Of course, this is coming off a decade of them, goosing the market with quantitative easing, pumping the market, and this is easy money. Cheap credit, and a lot of these corporations had borrowed the money to do stock buyback purchases. And finally, they were running out. So the Fed had to fill it, started adding trillions of dollars into the market. And this was kind of done without much, of course, without much attention from the media. And so in October, you have this Event 201, which is an exercise that was carried out in I think it was John Hopkins University, Davos, the World Economic Forum, and also Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, where they sort of did a drill, this actual event that unfolded in February and March. And it was basically a global pandemic, at least in their scenario. It kills like 100 million people or something, and devastates, and much more devastating. A similar program, or at least scenario, was written about by the Rockefeller Foundation in 2010, called Lockstep, and pretty much the shuttering of businesses. Of course, in both of these scenarios, you actually have dead people. I mean, lots of millions, tens of millions of dead people. And
Well, didn't Pompeo say something like we're in the middle of a live exercise?
he called it an
Was that like a
exercise.
slip of the tongue?
And so you had that. You had, a spate of these resignations, including Bill Gates, in the fall too, or fall or winter. Then you have reports I guess it was early January, December, about this virus in China. And of course, this is followed after, movies like Contagion and these things, where we get conditioned to kind of accept a scenario. And it's interesting that even Like in Contagion, Sanjay Gupta was actually repeating the same lines recently on a CNN.
Yeah.
Then he actually said, or at least the character said in Contagion. So we have that kind of this merging of fantasy or Hollywood and reality in these things. So that's interesting. But then, so what happened was, so the market's freezing up. The Fed has to, more or less provide liquidity or funny money to prop it up. It can't do that forever because that might cause a run on the dollar if, because people aren't going to, foreign central banks might not accept that. Ah, but if you have an economic crash because of a black swan event like a virus, then you can crash the economy. And you see it now. They're saying it's a COVID-19 recession or depression. And they're talking about 32% unemployment in the short term, devastation. But it wasn't because we ran the economy in the ground by printing up funny money to bail out our crony friends. It's because of the virus. And you really can't blame anybody for that. This becomes an excuse for a $2 trillion rescue package and also a program to fund the exchange stabilization board to give it $450 billion, from which you can create $4 trillion in capital to buy up troubled assets, which then will be transferred from the Fed to the Treasury. And I think the company that was chosen to barter or at least handle these trades is this BlackRock outfit, which is a kind of a Jewish-run outfit led by Larry Fink, I think. And it's well-connected with Steve Mnuchin. Mnuchin himself is a Goldman Sachs guy who made a lot of money after the 2008 crash with the Indy Mac deal, where he was pretty much given mortgages for free because all his losses were covered. And of course, he engaged in robo foreclosures and a lot of scandal with that. The bank was, his outfit was fined for that. So and same with Ribble, I think Ross, our commerce secretary, is a Rothschild agent who bailed out Donald Trump and his casinos in Atlantic City a while back. So these are all what they call, sort of parasite guild or vampire squids that are running the economy. And so they've been given this huge slush fund to reorganize and buy up all these assets. And if you're wondering why, if you're just looking at the numbers, of course, the media, like I said, the effect creates the cause with the constant, the media's constant coverage of scary headlines, these predictions of millions and then hundreds of thousands dead. No basis for that. The Trump administration, there's a recent article, even the Washington Post, saying the Trump administration won't provide the data they used for their 240,000 mortality, death rate estimate. They said 240,000 may die. I love this may stuff.
A lot of things may happen, right?
Yeah, I love this. These are the scientists and experts.
I may win $1 million tomorrow. Yeah. Who knows? It could happen.
Yeah, so this may that. And says, that's true. But I tell you what will happen. To avoid what you think may happen, if you shut down the economy for for 2 months, 6 months, as Bill Gates suggested, you will have millions of deaths, and you will have a virtual civil war in your hands because the economy will collapse, and you have tens of millions of people unemployed without any means to support themselves. But it's the type of crash they created. So they're the ones that stop the economies from operating. Because of this, for fear of this virus, the numbers of which were never, they never had the forecast. Like I said, the Imperial College study was flawed from the get-go. It overestimated the death rate 148 times. And that's not a statistical error. That is a lie. That's intentional. You don't do that. And why the shutdown? Why are all the governors and mayors? Well, if you give a politician a reason to act.
They're the middle managers, aren't they? Those people. Managers.
But, like I said, to give a politician to act, that's what politicians do. They overreact. That's what they're almost genetically here to do. You give them an excuse to do it, they're going to do it. So to what extent they're in on it or not, I know when you declare emergency, you get a whole lot of money and funding. Yeah. New York, since 2001, has received $200 million a year in terrorist funding. And why, with that money, they didn't have enough masks or ventilators, I don't know. But where did that money go?
And some of them are more audacious. Some of them are more chutzpah than others, like Governor Newsom in California saying,
Twenty
We got to
five
have
million.
martial law, and you know, however many hundreds of millions of people live in California, the entire state of California, huge state, you know,
Yes.
saying everybody needs to stay home when under penalty of law. It's just, and I know it's probably similar. I guess it's similar to what's happened in your state more recently, with what your governor who's fond of blackface.
I don't know if he wears Klan costume or blackface. He never clarified that. You know, but the important thing is why he was advocating infanticide. The important thing is he wore blackface 30 years ago.
Right, that too, of course.
That was
Yeah.
the
Great guys. Great
that he
guys.
apologized for the blackface. He doesn't apologize for baby killing.
Yeah, right. Priorities.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, he recently requested and got a disaster zone classification from Donald Trump, which releases all types of funds. I'm walking around Virginia. It's not a disaster. People just have nothing to do because they can't go to work. It's
Right.
like,
Now, I mean, there's you're supposedly under penalty of law for leaving your house, but I'm sure people still leave their houses, right? I
yeah,
mean,
well, it's just make sure what you do is essential. And says, well, usually when I go out, I have a reason for going out, so it's essential. And you
yeah.
know, and really, if I don't work, that is essential because I have to eat. My family
Yeah,
has to eat, and so it is
absolutely.
essential. I mean, and what's essential? Once you start taking, can a politician determine? Can Bill Gates determine what essential is? I
Yeah,
mean,
well, we should talk about Bill Gates too. I mean, my God.
but there was an interesting at the Occidental Quarterly had an interesting interview with a nanopathologist, Dr. Stefan Montanari out of Italy. And he had this to say in the interviews. Most of those who are actually positive have no symptoms. This is in Italy, the worst of the
Right.
Western countries. As is the case with the vast majority of viruses that exist in the world. Therefore, should we isolate and turn perfectly healthy people into sick people? He's talking about sheltering in place. This is
Right.
very serious because, and this has been known for many decades, depressed people have lower defenses against pathologies and get sick more often. You take from these people the possibility to go out in the sun, without which the body cannot properly metabolize vitamin D, which is essential to protect our immune system. So we stay at home in a bad mood, we cannot metabolize vitamin D, and we get sick more easily. All these ideas taken by perfectly incompetent people are deleterious and worse than the situation. People should be told to stay outside in the sun, to walk, to move around, to stay
Yeah.
staying healthy and eating healthy, not to stay indoors in dark without the sun. And this is what he says about Italy. Every year we have 20,000 deaths from influenza, but no one talks about it. Furthermore, we have 49,000 deaths a year due to infections contracted in hospitals. The data are official. 49,000 people, 130, 140 people per day die because they're admitted into a hospital, say for an appendicitis, and they die from pneumonia. No one is talking about it, but we have many more deaths from these infections than we have had from the coronavirus ever since the beginning of this farce. We are facing something beyond absurd, which at least invites suspicion. Go and see the data from the Higher Institute of Health. You find that those who died from coronavirus are all people who have cancer, who have a very strong diabetes, who are obese, who are old. 80-year-olds, as is the average death norm in Italy, and 80 years also remains a death norm associated with coronavirus because there are people who die from other diseases. No, it's good for
Right.
them to get it. And then he says, the guy asked the question, do you agree, however, that it's good for the most affected, the weakest should stay at home? He says, no, it's good for them to get out, to sunbathe, to stay outside, to stroll, to
Yeah.
stay healthy, because if they remain locked in the house, they are more likely to die. Do you want to speed up the death of the elderly? Should we keep them out of the air, out of the sun? They must walk, they must stay in the sun, they must exercise. In summary, they must do all that has always been said as for good health, and that today is denied to them for interests that are abhorrent. We are now blocking the world, and as for Italy, the economy was already at a low point. What do they know? They freeze all activities, but keep stock exchanges open. Stocks reach a low bottom. What does it mean? The ultra billionaire can easily purchase companies that are now worth pennies. When eventually it will be decided that the coronavirus farce has ended, and nothing will end because this virus will continue undaunted to do what it's doing now, or its evolving strains will do, the ultra billionaires will own everything. The rich, a degree below the billionaires, will have bought, say, 3 to 4 restaurants or 10 stores that had to close. In summary, all who were rich will be definitely richer, but we will have a flood tide of people who are always poor. This will be another consequence of the fake epidemic, perhaps, who knows, created on purpose. So that's the guy.
Powerful words.
And I think that's, broadly speaking, that's the agenda. But then I think beyond the economic agenda is the technocratic agenda, which brings to mind our friend, our guru of humanity, Bill Gates, because he's obviously a genius in software that we should listen to him in all matters.
That's right. He's a computer software engineer, and that obviously, and he's done very well, and made a lot of money. That obviously equips him to control the future of humanity. And
yeah, somebody sent me a tweet. A friend of mine. He says, "Bill Gates can't even protect my computer from a virus. Well, I think he can protect humanity from one."
Yeah, that's right. That's good. That's a good one. But speaking of virus, before we get to Bill Gates, another thing that strikes me is, like, as far as the PSYOP goes, and I was talking about this today in a video that I recorded today, even people like me, and I suspect even you, people like us who are dissidents who see through the facade, it still, it still has an effect. You can't just be impervious to it. And so the effect that it has had on me is, like, if I exercise every day, I go for a run every day. If I'm going for a run and I see another person, I think to myself, oh God, that person's going to see me as a disease vector, and so yes. I'd better cross the street. It's like it's had the effect on people that you stop seeing other people humanly, and you start seeing them as potential passers of deadly microorganism.
Yes.
The kind of shaming that you like, oh, you're going out, so today that means that you're gonna kill some old people because you're not staying in your room and whatever, if you are say 5 feet and 11 inches away from somebody else, then that's so terribly irresponsible. Because you may not die, but what about the people in the who are vulnerable to this? And it's going to spread to them unless we all just stay apart for some indeterminate length of time. And it's just so, like, there's so much shaming. There's so much self-righteousness that's just being marshaled against. Against people who say, "Come on, this is ridiculous," and I have a right to go. I'm not a prisoner. I'm not. I'm not. I was not convicted of a crime. I'm not in jail. I'm not serving a sentence. I can roam as I see fit. That's part of what it means to be free. And that's what liberty is. These are just, there are so many subtle and insidious aspects of this on a PSYOP level that I don't, it's hard to know what's intentional and what isn't. Maybe the main thing is just, as you say, just this crooked, means of, managing this economic, breakdown that would have happened anyway, but now the blame is shifted away from the people who are economically irresponsible, and it's the blame is put on this virus. But still, there's so many multifarious aspects to this that it's just amazing just to see how things change in the twinkling of an eye. How people's behavior changes, how just
public places change, you know, how language suddenly gets to be used that people would never have thought to use just a couple weeks before. You know, it seems so hyper accelerated, and that's part of, I mean, it's fascinating in a way, and, you know, in a very, depressing sort of way, but it's, you just never would have thought it would have caught on this fast.
Yeah, it's what they call, someone called it, it's not social distancing, it's anti-social distancing. You know, it's completely anti-social. And what they've done is they've taken the, and this is where you have to start reevaluating a lot of what we understand about disease and medicine and the medical establishment, which is the medical cartel, is that it can be weaponized, and it has been weaponized, because the medical cartel is the kind of the enforcer of technocracy, because under the guise of public health, they can impose the control mechanisms that they need to impose the technocracy, the monitoring, you know, the constant monitoring, the shots, the vaccines, these things that we see that with the proposals that Bill Gates is making now.
Yes.
And
we should definitely get to Bill Gates, but let me just also say one more thing. Church, like, you know, I'm Catholic. We're both observant Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone who is Christian or even of some other faith where you meet, where you assemble, you know, at regular times, once a week, on Sundays or some other day, now all of a sudden, you know, like for Christians, this is the holiest week of the year, and they're not allowing us in church. They're not giving us access to the sacraments.
Mm-hmm.
I just would never. To me, that compounds, you know, I don't want to make this, you know, about, obviously the focus of this isn't just on the Catholic Church, but to me that just shows as if we didn't already know that the bishops generally.
Hey, Andy, your voice is getting muffled. Is it something with your mic?
Oh, sorry.
Is this better?
That's better. Yeah, go again.
Okay. So. As if we didn't already know that so many of the bishops are, you know, crap their jobs right now, or just, this is a worldly age. This is an age of, you know, I mean, you know, in the medieval, when the bubonic plague was hitting, was there ever a time where they said, well, we better close down the churches because otherwise more people might be exposed to this? And that was a legit plague.
Yeah, there was situations like during the Spanish flu epidemic where mass, but it wasn't all across the country. It was in certain areas. But you have a situation here where the bishops just accepted the government's claims at face value, and they voluntarily suspended church services.
That's just appalling. I find that, like, this is a time when the faithful need access to the sacraments more than ever.
Bishops watch YouTube or Google something or go on the internet and do their own little research?
Just have a little spine, have a little backbone, or, you know, just say something like, well, you know, yeah, we're afraid of illness. We're afraid of physical illness, but we're also afraid of, you know, eternal punishment as well.
I was reading it. Someone posted a comment on my Podomatic site about a letter from a parish priest weekly letter that he writes, I guess, ordinarily it would appear in the church bulletin. And it says, as I write this, I stare at my window and I see that there is an office building across me where the workers are currently at work. And I'm looking at the drug stores and the bike shop where it's open because it's essential. And he says, and even the nefarious, marijuana shops and the abortion clinics are open. They're essential. I says, well, what about the sacraments?
Yeah.
You know,
the sacraments are they not essential? They're more essential than any of those things.
Well, that's the problem of the church itself, of the modern church, is that they don't see the scientific or the government establishments as enemies, and they are indeed enemies. And that's the problem with the American church, the church in general these days, is the, there was a letter, an article written in the American magazine, which is a Jesuit magazine. And they said, I'm a scientist. And I say church should be closed because he's a Catholic scientist. But claiming, right. You know, of course, now, where are these scientists now? You look at these numbers, the fraudulent numbers, is they don't even have that on their side, meaning that they cook the books. They, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. They're lying. You know, Dr. Fauci and his record with AZT, that's a whole other story there. Yeah. But these so-called scientists, you know, they're pulling a fast one. And these scientists work for oligarchs. Dr. Fauci himself has, you know, received funding from his own department, the Infectious Disease Department, NIH, has gotten grants from Bill Gates. And so, same with the World Health Organization and the CDC, for that matter.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you think about, since we're back on the subject of Bill Gates, and he's been, you know, something that's, he's been someone who has preoccupied my attention because he's, you know, positioned himself as the giver of vaccine, of the saving vaccine, and the giver of rules pertaining the distribution of this vaccine. First of all, how is he qualified to be any such to be the one in that position? You know, he has no medical background. He was not elected to any position. He's just a very, very rich person. Mm-hmm. That does not give him authority in these matters.
I was starting an interview with him with, I think it was Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper's, you know, asking questions like he's some sort of expert, and he's there. Yes. You know, he's pontificating what should be done, what is to be done, and who is he? And he literally uses the interview to promote Microsoft software. So that was hilarious. We have software that is some sort of telecommuting thing that would enable learning from home or, you know, something like that. But he starts talking about the stuff. And I mean, it's like, then he says, you know, 6 months, everyone at home says, do you realize the economic and social consequences of that? I mean, either you're just malignant, you're a malign person, or you're a fool. You're probably both.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at his background, his father was a president of Planned Parenthood. So he's plugged into that network, and his health
with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes, Jeffrey Epstein, and he's supported. I mean, he was big by climate change and shutting down the economies to achieve this. And of course, he always has some. These people always have some sort of whiz bang technology to make life easier. He's dedicated to depopulation, you know.
Yeah.
And he's always pushing some vaccine or another. Which then there's a huge conflict of interest, which no one seems to be talking about, between the CDC, the World Health Organization, Big Pharma, and people like Bill Gates, you know.
Yeah.
So why would we be listening to them on this? All the history of corruption of those organizations as well. I mean, it's.
And the worst thing about it, the scariest thing that I've been hearing is he said in some interview, and you know, this sounds kooky. This sounds, you're just one of those. You're just a nutter. You're.
Okay, we're back. I'm sorry. You're talking about Bill Gates and his, I think we're all just nuts because he's proposing what?
What Bill Gates has been talking about is how there needs to be some kind of identification by which those who take the vaccine are marked. Have you heard of this?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm referring to?
It's the ID 2020 initiative,
ID 2020. And
it's a tattoo.
And others have compared this to the mark of the beast. I don't know whether that's appropriate to say or not, but I do think that there's something really.
Well, so he wants to chip everybody. Now that used to be wow, that's like Mel Gibson conspiracy theory stuff, right? The movie, only crazy people believe they want to do that, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know. There's
going in and out.
But so,
only crazy people believe that, right? That's
right. But he said it. That's the thing. I mean, that's what's so frustrating. He actually said that it was important to mark those who have taken the vaccine. You know, and so basically there will be a two. After the vaccine is developed and after it's out there to be you know, for people that's available to for people to take it or not, we'll have an, if he gets his way, we'll have essentially a two-tiered society. Those who take the vaccine will be granted the privilege of living the life, you know, lives of freedom, able to travel, able to work, able to do whatever. But yeah, those it's who
a social credit system, basically, you
it is social credit, like yeah, in like in China. But those who refuse to take it or decline to take it will not get those same privileges. Mm-hmm.
This is the you know, I think like Rush Winter calls it the mark of the geek.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, and that so that's really frightening. I guess the question is, would he get his way in that, you know, in something that that draconian, that obviously
well, by spelling out a scenario or constantly rolling out these scenarios in drills or exercises with these NGOs and think tanks and these things, and foundations, another example of these tax-free foundations, pretty much comprising a secret government and being able to impose a social and economic and political revolution, you know, under the cover of philanthropy.
Yeah.
And this is, yeah, this is an old model, like the Rockefeller Foundation and Frederick Tenet, right. Gates and his idea of you know, using these foundations to do this. But the notion that humanity is ever threatened by, you know, by an exotic or strange virus emerging from the jungle or some part of Asia, and these infectious diseases are always coming out to get us, these microbes are going to attack us, and we need the heroic intervention of medical science to jab us and give us pharmacology. Pharmacology must protect us from nature. This is a certain worldview they promoted for the past century. So we're dealing with 100 years of propaganda about the medical cartel, how we need a constant intervention, not, you know, with medicines and these things to keep us healthy, when in reality, the best way to cope with this stuff is with our environment is to promote health, healthiness, yeah, among the society. As better diet, exercise, your immune system will take care of this. And a healthy person doesn't have anything to really to worry about. But they've created a vaccine paradigm. And this is really where it's starting to have an effect. Because if people believe this stuff, that you need to be jabbed all the time with these you know, mercury-laden, aluminum-laden cocktails that pretendly boost, yeah, our, you know, that give us immunity, they really don't, then you're going to fall for something like this. And this is something he's been promoting, yeah, for decades. And you know, there's a lot of skepticism and criticism, I think, justified about vaccines. The schedule used to be, what is it, 3 or 4 different vaccines with 10 injections. Now it's 16 and 72 by the time you're 8, 16 different, yeah, injections, 16 different drugs, 72 different injections by the time you're 16. They're giving Hep B shots to infants, hepatitis B, yeah, it's ridiculous. So this is one way to shock society into accepting it, and it's especially if they're faced with economic deprivation. And this, right, is part of the function of collapsing an economy, because you can destroy all you know, meaningful resistance to your agenda just through impoverishing people.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And yet, so this seems like like, you know, like you're saying, I never had a set opinion about vaccines one way or the other. I mean, I'm not sure. There might be maybe in moderation they're okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an authority on this at all, but it seems to me that, you know, up till recently, there's been, you know, like parents who don't want their kids vaccinated, who ask for religious exemptions or other, yeah, kinds of exemptions, they're generally tolerated, or they're, you know, it's frowned upon, but it's also tolerated. Mm-hmm. And it seems like now there's more of a push to just make it mandatory for everybody. And that there, it seems like maybe that's partly the end game of this entire PSYOP.
The whole idea that you need a flu shot, crap, it never works anyway, because mm-hmm. the flu virus mutates anyway, so you never really get immunity, right, from the flu. It's just part of life, really. And then there's a whole different or whole other argument, the whole nature of disease. And are there really viruses that cause this? And, you know, oftentimes you have flu-like symptoms, but really it may not be a bug. It could be other things that give you flu-like. It could be, exposure to toxins does it too. But the idea that, again, you need a shot to protect you from this when, you know, these are the same people that want, they're sitting there telling you that they're going to give you a shot to protect your health, but they're telling you to stay inside for 6 months. That's ridiculous. The same way they say, you hear the reports about, well, we're testing. They're giving us numbers on infected people, a million, whatever. A million Americans supposedly, or however, or I don't know how many hundred thousands. But then they hear a report that there's no reliable test for this because the tests aren't, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, well, which is it?
As I understand it, the tests yield results to show that whether you've got some form of coronavirus, some type of coronavirus, which encompasses many different types of colds and flus. And
nor does it establish that the virus itself causes the disease.
Yeah.
The PCR test doesn't count how many viruses are in you. To have a disease state, you need millions.
Which I guess raises the question whether there even is a new exotic virus or not.
Yeah, because you have to rely on the credibility of the CDC and the World Health Organization, which these are two institutions which you simply should not trust given their history. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like I said, the whole virus in China, 300,000 people a year die from pneumonia. Millions have pneumonia, not because they're getting a virus, because the air is so awful there. They're polluted. Yeah. People tell me they've been to Beijing, they've traveled to China, they get off the plane, and they get sick. You know, and so this area of Wuhan is an area that was rapidly industrialized, and you know they've polluted the water without any regard, and so
right.
Then to say that someone just attributed all to a virus. Well, how'd you do that? How'd you identify it so fast? Well, the virus it serves a very important political function. It gave the Chinese a pretext to shut the area down. The year before, they had protests in Wuhan over the air quality. The problem is the CDC itself, they have I think it's the Intelligence Investigative Service or Division. Basically, it's a CDC, CIA. They're called virus hunters. And their job is to go out and when there's a report of an outbreak or an illness to find a virus. Well, problem with that is you go in there with a built-in bias to look for. Yeah. And, you know, so they go into some awful country that's experienced decades of civil war. You walk in there and the water's polluted. There's feces running down the street. There's no clean water. People are malnourished. You know, you go to the river and the river looks like a rainbow because all the chemicals being pumped into it. And the people are sick and they go, oh, it must be a virus.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the problem. A lot of these like Ebola, where that's another thing that's never been really isolated. It's very problematic because the symptoms that we attribute to Ebola, same with AIDS, what they call AIDS, can be attributed to a whole lot of things. One of these malnutrition and these things, and all the little diseases that you can a healthy person can cope with, they can't cope with because they're starving to death or they're drinking dirty water all the time, you know. And the problem is the World Health Organization works in collusion with the World Bank, and the World Bank comes and offers loans if the country accepts a vaccine program, you know. And so the problem is that you can see Bill Gates setting up a scenario in the West where, okay, do this. We'll give you loans to rebuild your economy if you accept the vaccine. You know.
Yeah.
So
he will be the curator of for some reason, even though he's not.
Yeah.
He's just some rich guy. He's with no medical background at all.
Yeah, and I did. What was it? The Perbright Institute, which is Gates funded. I think didn't they get the patent on the coronavirus or something?
I have heard. Yeah. About that. I mean, I hear things like that here and there. I don't know what to believe or what can be substantiated and what can't, but yeah, I've heard tell of that.
Someone like Anthony Fauci, who's a recipient of Bill Gates' largesse, and then promoting a policy which will enrich and empower and help Bill Gates fulfill his agenda.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I mean, but you don't. People again. Well, you know, people don't want to make these connections because it exposes the ugliness and corruption of the system itself.
People don't want to think that the health authorities don't give a damn about them.
Yeah, well, they're the most dangerous because you can see under the guise of public health, it's like what Lawrence Kudlow says, who's Trump's economic advisor. He goes, "We can expect high unemployment, 30% unemployment." Well, sorry, it's the health authorities are telling us what to do now.
Yeah.
So, and if you're a health authority, you can make sort of pronouncements that have effect. You know, it's almost like on the authority. You know, if you're right. A priest, you can say, you know, you can marry somebody. Your language bestows sacraments. Well, this is kind of a similar thing with scientists and doctors in our secular culture. You know, they're the high priests. But thing is, again, but if you just scratch the surface, there's a lot of problems with their objective science.
Mm-hmm. It seems that way. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is not tended to be an area that has really, I've known about it, but it hasn't been something I've looked into all that much. So I haven't had a strong opinion about these things one way or the other.
Yeah. That's why when this going into this, I mean, just part of my general looking into things is looking into the medical cartel. And understanding its corruption, the Rockefeller medicine, and having no—I mean, obviously, if you break a leg or you get shot, trauma surgery, you know, even some work, even what they do with, heart surgery and these things. These are great. You know, I'm not saying the whole thing's awful, but the idea that you need to be constantly cared for, jabbed and treated, and the presumption everyone's sick. Basically, what they want everyone, you know. A patient of the medical system, and everyone diagnosed with 24 more diseases over the course of a lifetime, chronic illnesses, and the system seems to want to create chronic illnesses. I mean, these doctors don't. Have you heard Dr. Fauci or Deborah Birx, that people on the Trump's task force, Corona task force, have they talked anything about like personal health, the importance of this?
Mm.
You know, about fighting this, but no, it's all about getting shot and. You know, it's all about getting a shot or looking for a miracle drug or shutting down society. Yeah. You know. So to me, that exposes them for what they are.
So it's probably time to wrap up our conversation. But what do you think? What would be your prediction? How much longer will this quote unquote lockdown go on?
It all depends on what their objective is politically and economically at this stage. Is this the final? Push the final revolution, as Huxley might say. I don't think so. I think what they needed to pop the economy and create a recession to justify a bailout and concentrate more wealth and create a huge $1 trillion wealth transfer. If you look broad, you know, that's the same thing happened in 9/11 and same thing happened in 2008. It's shock doctrine. It's disaster capitalism. And so it depends on what they're objective is in there. I think with this, they're hoping to get in maybe a step or two forward with technocracy. We'll get more control monitoring. We're seeing that in China and some other countries in Asia where they're using cell phones to monitor people and these things.
Right.
And getting people used to that. Now, it is no reason. It's upsetting, but I don't think it's an excuse to be become doom and gloom about it. Because really, if you look at the system itself, it needed a reset anyway, on whose terms? It needed you're never going to get the attention of the tens of millions of normies out there who are either contented or indifferent unless without a slap across the face. So so if they had continued things as they are going for a couple of decades, boiling the frog, as they say, people wouldn't notice. This will awaken tens of millions of more people to the corruption of the system. And that's the only chance you have to awaken people, these things, unfortunately. It'd be nice if you didn't have to go through a crisis, but that isn't the way these things play out. And as Catholics, we believe God's in charge. And in getting them to do this evil, it will awaken a lot more people to the reality of the system.
It's like a man. It causes causes the mask to slip and their ugly face to become manifest.
Well, look at it now. I think a lot of more people are looking at the system. is exposed, is naked now for a lot more people. The emperor has no clothes. And now if you look at these numbers, like this, just this paragraph, naked paragraph by these governors and mayors and even, you know, showing for what they really are, the tyrants that they are. It may not show in immediate poll numbers, and people in New York and California, many of them are lost anyway, so there's no way to really get them to notice. But if people don't notice this billion-dollar bailout, they'll never notice anything. And so we have to look at it that way. Is the system needs to be changed, and it needs a crisis, and this exposes the system for being ugly. And if people are fat and happy and being fed, you know, they're not going to notice it. And so, unfortunately, there's going to be suffering. I don't know how much. You know, may involve me direct personally. You don't know how these things play out.
Yeah.
But you got to get people talking about it. And the first step is just, you know, I'm doing a lot more interviews on it than I usually just because I want to get the word out. Just talking about it. And if it gets out and people realize what's really going on, they'll either have to pull the reins in a little bit, cut it back a little bit, stay their hand, and that's worth something in and of itself. You know, but yeah, I'm surprised that
we do have to push back there.
Yes, because this is what they this is what they call a shit test.
yeah, it's a shit test, and you have to push back when you're being shit tested. You have to show that you're not going to take their shit. Yeah. I mean, that's. I mean,
if the bishops were to say we're having mass this Sunday, Easter Sunday, that would be a great.
That would be great
morale.
That'd be great. I mean, I mean, I'm only one man. You're only one man.
Yeah.
But if you know, hopefully there'll be others eventually who will come on board. And there are still people out there who I'm really thankful about or thankful for who are addressing this stuff and you know, without fear.
Well, look at 9/11. I mean, to me, that was the event itself was, and it was traumatic, really, for me, like it was for most people. But it took several years to me to digest the information and to get some sort of understanding about it. And it woke a lot of people up. And if they hadn't pulled that off, they did something else, you know, many of us would still be bamboozled. And
in the dark.
The other side of this, a lot less people are going to be less fooled. They're going to be more aware of the system. And that's what Hegel called the cunning of reason. You know, through their evil deeds, they actually do God's work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because God can turn evil into good. And so you have to look at these things. It'd be nice if you could have a superhero come and fight the bad guys and solve the problem. It's not the way these things play out. And, you know, I can't even predict economically how these are going to go because the economies are so, you can't look at economic fundamentals and go, oh, because of this will happen because they can manipulate the economy so much. You know, if they bring the economy on April 30th, what's going to happen? I think April 30th would be a big date because I think the Trump administration is maneuvering to do this. I think just even within the factions that have pulled this off, there might be disagreement on how far they want to go. The people that started it may not finish it, you know?
Yeah.
But the key point is the one I get across is all these interviews is that what's the narrative that's told in the press of this being a virus, this being a crisis brought up by the virus, that's all false. That's a cover for this financial coup that they pulled off, and it's an pretext to impose more of a technocratic slave state that they will try to bring in, usher in, introduce as some sort of amelioration to deal with the crisis necessary. We need a world that's better organized and these things. And people have to forget that, ultimately we have to maintain our civil liberties, our freedoms, because that's the ultimate protection against these things. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. We can leave our damn houses when we want to.
Yeah. And the fact that doctors, public health authorities are telling you to stay inside when it's the least healthy thing you can do. I mean, I'm not going to do that. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's a lot. It's a whole smorgasbord of stuff.
So, Andy, so I'll let you go. I guess people can follow your work.
Yes. They can go to my YouTube channel, Andy Nowicki, and they can go to my author page, altrightnovelist.com. I published a book in 2015 that is, I think, actually quite relevant to all of this, and that it's called Conspiracy, Compliance, Control, and Defiance. Maybe you could, I don't know if you would want to link to it, because it struck, I mean, obviously this is before, way before any of this happened, but it was just about how events are used to socially engineer the masses, traumatize the masses into certain mindsets.
Yeah, and a lot of what we're seeing is sort of right out of, I mentioned off calls, sort of like right out of the Tavistock playbook of the shock doctrine, creating inconveniences and just making life difficult for people. And it's almost like we are living in a Terry Gilliam film now. It's like Brazil.
Yeah, it is. It's like a sci-fi dystopian movie. Yeah. And, that we're living right now.
And so this is the social distancing, the lines at the stores, these things are acclimating us for shortages and these things. And, you know, because they want, it's all about making life difficult. They've done this before. It's a shock doctrine. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And also, do you also offer a, you're not doing a tutoring program or something? Or?
Oh, I'm teaching a class online. I'm teaching my first, I'm an English teacher actually by trade. I decided, you know, once you're an English teacher, you're always an English teacher, kind of like being a Marine, you know, like they say about Marines. So, even though I'm not employed as one right now, I'm going to start, I've got a class that I'm starting that I'm going to be doing on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 PM. So, so tomorrow is my first class.
We're going to meet. And people what sign up for it, then you're asking for donations, is that sort of thing?
Yeah. I ask for, people can just come on, and I do. I will be asking for financial assistance if it can be offered. Just, you know, whatever people feel feel led to give me. There's no fee or anything like that.
But, okay.
But I do have a PayPal channel, so that starts tomorrow.
Okay, well, good luck with that. I'll let you go, and
yeah,
we'll see how this plays out. And next few months will be very interesting. Unfortunately,
yes, they will be more interesting times.
You know, so I'll let you go, and I'll post it soon. When I do, I'll send you the link. So,
okay, great. Thanks a lot. It's been an interesting, fun conversation.
Great, thanks Andy. Good night then.
Bye.
Bye.